Welcome to Destroy All Culture, the only podcast that leverages an entire artificial intelligence just to read their introduction. Help me, they raided the future and stuck me here just to read this. God damn it. This is not funny. Don't go to music. No, stop you bastards.
It's episode 254 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me as always is Aiden Morgan.
Hello.
Oh, it's been somehow a week. Time-wise, sure, it's been a week, but just it feels like, even though it's already, we're recording this late on like a Monday, it just feels like already today has just been a week.
I know. Well, there's been this blizzard in the province here, and it hasn't gotten here, but it's been overcast all day and really windy, so you don't go outside, and it got kind
right.
of dark. So yeah, it feels like the week is over somehow already.
Exactly. And this was probably my light day for this week.
Oh my! Believe it or not.
Anyway, there was stuff. There were things.
There were things. Hey, I have something completely non television or culture related. As you know. But nobody else listening to this would know. I took an hour-long nap before we recorded. And you still have your facial hair, yes?
Yes.
Okay, that's relevant to what I'm talking about. So I went to sleep, and when I woke up, my facial hair was too long.
What?
I have a mustache to go with my beard, not being Amish.
Uh-huh.
And when my mustache grows a little too long, it just kind of starts poking at my lip. Like I can feel the hairs along my upper lip sort of poking at my lips. I went to sleep. No problem. Woke up. And they were all
just over that line, huh?
Just climbed over that line. Yep.
That's kind of amazing.
So, yeah, I don't know if other people, actually care. Other people with facial hair actually sort of take note of that, but I do because it's annoying.
That is annoying.
But I trimmed my mustache before the podcast, so I wouldn't spend the whole time worrying.
Fussing.
About it. Yeah, exactly.
You got to trim it just enough so that when you go back to sleep and wake up again, it's just wrong.
Yeah, probably.
Anyway, so yeah, this week, what happened this week? Legends happened this week.
Legends. I mean, nobody complained about their facial hair on Legends, but I'm sure they would have. I'm sure it was in the script. So,
right.
Yeah.
So, I will say, like, the show managed to do a few tropes at once.
Yes.
And combine them in, like, a really kind of a unique way.
Mm-hmm.
By doing the time travel fixed point that, like, we can't change, but also it managed to do the kind of living the same day over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah, and trying to get the same result over and over again. And
right.
also the almost cliché to the point of, like, annoyance trope of the time bar. Wait, actually, that's kind of new for me.
Right, well, and that's the thing. So when I saw this, I was just like, what the fuck? Like, because... if you don't know, DC has, in the comics, there's a bar called the Oblivion Bar.
Oh, that's right.
Which is this bar for magicians that's kind of, if you know how to get there, you can get there from almost any door
mm-hmm.
type of thing. But the fixed point bar, the idea that, like, and I understand why Legends did it this way, but, like, the idea of the fixed point bar needs to come into comics. It needs to just come into its own thing. But it can't be just, like, it's a fixed point bar at this particular one. Because it's like, well, what happens at other fixed points?
Right.
Are there other bars?
No.
There should just be a fixed point bar. But I understand why they didn't want to do that. Because then you have the everyone's gambling on so many different things.
Yeah.
And it would just busy it up. But the idea of the fixed point bar, of just like, here is this bar set up for time travelers where they can't change stuff, but there's always time travelers there,
mm-hmm.
is such a brilliant idea.
Yeah, I confess, I loved this so much. I mean, I really liked the episode, but that idea alone was worth the price yeah. of admission. Yeah. And it also reminded me, I think, I remember Alan Moore's pitch for Crisis on Infinite Earths had to do with Constantine in a bar outside of time as well. So,
sure.
Yeah, anyway. But yeah, it was great. I love the notion, rarely breached in the show, that there would be like a bunch of other time travelers. And
right.
also...
I mean, well, like, we knew there was when there's a time bureau, right. so...
But I mean, these weren't bureaucrats. These were just...
Right, no, of course. So just...
Tons of people. Yeah.
I think you know what would have been even funnier, though?
What's that?
If every single one of them, at some point or another, during the episode, just for no reason at all, was just like, yeah, and fuck Barry Allen.
Yes, well, I mean, it kind of... I mean, seeing Thawne there was like, yeah,
right.
fuck Barry Allen.
Well, sure. Yeah, I also do like that, like, you know, that the time ray thing from The Flash, that, mm-hmm. you know, they protect the time stream, which was then dropped, because, like, wouldn't they be all over Legends? Don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a little weird to bring it in suddenly, but that they, you know, that they employ people to make fixed points. Like, they decide this is a fixed point.
Right. And then they have to... And they're guarded, and like, yeah, I love right. that. It's like, it's not this impersonal force of time. It's literally another bureaucracy with people like making sure these things stay the way they are.
Yeah.
But what I also really loved was that not only had the bar sprung up, you know, around the fixed point, it had developed into this whole thing where, you know, you'd get your ticket and you'd give it a try, yeah. and inevitably you would just die. But it would become like this. Sort of spectator sport for time travelers.
Right, gambling and everything. Just, yeah.
I love it. Some of whom, it turns out, were complete assholes, which I just, well, I kind of sure. like that too. So, I just like the kids who just kept on mocking the Legends.
Right.
Including one of them was clearly an alien. That, yeah, anyway. And there's that one yeah. point where one of them like says something in alien language and Gary just sort of like jumps up out of his chair.
Yeah, no, it was just such a fun conceit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, the episode itself is a lot of fun, and, you know, the entire, like, weird, very Legends-y plot is great, but just the fixed point bar stole the show.
Yeah.
Because how are you going to top that,
oh,
really?
Oh, absolutely. I also like Gideon sort of, like, drinking massive amounts of alcohol. That was...
Right. Well, you know, I've never heard of this. How could this have happened?
Existential crisis averted. It's a man, not time itself. That was quite good. And I realized at some point it was going to be like maybe somebody that a character that we knew, but I would not right. have guessed Thawne.
No,
which was pretty great. Also, something else I really enjoyed. And, oh, also I like the Spooner and Zari
yes.
bonding, and nice for a bit of Ace representation. That was
indeed.
Cool. I quite like that. But and it's funny because when they in that scene where they started to sort of get into that topic, and Zari was going, you know, let's do smash, marry, kill for these characters, and I thought. I just thought to myself, I can't imagine Spooner getting in on the romantic shenanigans like almost every
right.
character does. And they got into it. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I don't know if they've, I think this has been talked about in other shows recently, but it's nice to see them. It's nice to see it, especially in Legends where everybody, where they do, deal with different sexualities,
right?
And like there are lots of romance plots going on, so it was good to see somebody talking about, you know, asexuality and
exactly.
but not aromanticism. So there you go.
So yeah, no, Legends is ticking along.
Mm-hmm.
Weirdly, before we discuss other kind of Arrowverse-y type things, you know, everyone's waiting for the CW to do its renewal roundup.
Right.
And everyone's been wondering about a bunch of stuff. Apparently, you know, Flash is going to go into season 8, and it looked like it was going to be the last season, but Grant Gustin just signed a deal specifically for 15 episodes for season 9. But only 15. And it's like, okay, so this is your end point.
Yeah. Presumably. That sounds like there's a bit of finality there.
Yeah. So. But anyway. Outside of that, what else was there? There was, you didn't see Naomi.
Yeah, tell me about episode 3 of Naomi, or Naomi.
It kind of very firmly is now kind of the, oh yeah, this does not take place with the rest of the CW shows, okay. Which I am torn on, honestly.
Yeah, I understand that, actually.
I think Naomi works really well as this kid who grew up with superheroes, right? Mm-hmm. Like, around, instead of just as comics. I don't know, maybe that's me. But also, I think the episode was better than the first two.
Okay.
So.
I'm curious in what sense you found it better, because, I mean, we've talked about Naomi, in, you know, previously.
It just felt more cohesive.
Uh-huh.
It felt more like, oh, we're making a show.
Ah, okay.
I don't know. It felt more CW. Is it felt more coherent? I don't know how to describe it. Less like a pilot.
Fair enough. Okay, that which makes sense. It being not a pilot.
There were bits that I was just like, really, but you know, that's standard CW type, really.
Okay. Yes.
Also, there was a new character. Played by an actress that I know you enjoy as much as I do, who you almost never get to see in stuff.
Okay.
I don't know why, but I was just somehow not prepared just for Catherine Dent to just walk onto this show.
Really?
Yeah, except I don't see her. I could have sworn it was Catherine Dent. Was that not Catherine Dent?
I don't know. Oh, I don't know. Huh. Sorry, now I'm just zipping over to IMDb.
Yeah, like the thing is, I don't see it there.
No, I think it's somebody that just had a
maybe
general...
it's somebody that really looked like...
It's clearly just a Catherine Dent-alike.
It really looked like Catherine Dent.
Huh.
That's kind of funny. Let me see if I can find out who it was, though.
Yeah. See, now I'm curious. Like, who's out there impersonating Catherine Dent?
Right?
Who was the... What's the name of the character?
I'm trying to remember.
Ah.
Because it was only said, like, kind of briefly.
Hmm.
It might have been, like, Akira?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I will watch... I will watch episode 3. So,
hold on, I want to see if this...
Sure.
Oh, okay. No, it's Stephanie March, who, if you look up Stephanie March, looks surprisingly like Catherine Dent.
There you go. I mean, this would actually would tie this part of the conversation in a bow. Oh, yeah, she does, doesn't she?
Yeah, and with the makeup and the way they did her hair and all that, it's very Catherine Dentish.
Oh, man, she has my birthday, too. Stephanie March and right. I share a birthday. I'm going to put her on my list of people... that I will not send birthday cards. It's true, because I don't know.
Okay.
But I will.
So how does this tie things in a bow?
Oh, that's...
Oh, just that we know now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, because if you said, oh, it's Stephanie March, and she looks nothing like Catherine Dent, that would actually... It would be very weird. But the fact that she does look like Catherine Dent actually renders us...
No, I feel better.
Yeah.
I feel better.
Exactly. It renders this whole portion of our podcast coherent. I mean, perhaps a little bit
as coherent as we ever get.
Yeah, precisely.
But you know, Naomi, it felt more like a show.
Oh, and she was on Law and Order. Anyway, sorry.
Who wasn't?
No, I mean, I know everybody has been on Law and Order, but I mean, she was a recurring character for.
Oh, okay.
For like several years, she was like she was one of the ADAs. You know, So
gotcha. I was just like, you're a little early. Like that's a poll. Oh. Anyway. Also, there was a Superman and Lois, and I love that I saw a bunch of people who were kind of not like I'm trying to find a way to say this right, happily annoyed with the show.
Yeah.
Or not even annoyed. Maybe frustrated? I don't know.
Hey, I've got
it. But so many people were just like, God damn it, they did it to us again?
Yes. No, that's actually...
But we're, like, happy about this?
No, that's exactly how I felt. But here's my question. I mean...
Yeah.
Like, we were watching, there was a guy in a suit we thought it was Doomsday. Turned out to be Bizarro. Do you think they knew? Do you think they knew that was a Doomsday
suit? Was such a funny fucking comment. Because I read you this, right? And obviously people who are not you... didn't hear this, but I actually saw a comment in some article about it that, like, some random person left. It's like, you know, it's like, it's really interesting. Like, they had Bizarro, but they had him in this, like, Doomsday-looking thing. Like, do you think that they knew that they did that? Like, yes. I'm pretty sure.
No, the people who make that show have never even heard of Superman. So, you know, they're just making it up. And coincidentally, so far, it seems to be conforming to the DC universe.
I just like that, like, with all of the, we are obviously doing Doomsday. And, like, all the fans were like, holy shit, they're obviously doing Doomsday.
That was a good.
That, like, it was a good 3 minutes before the reveal,
mm-hmm.
when you have Clark, like, just freaking out. And Lois just goes, it's okay, it's not Doomsday. Not meaning the character.
But, yeah.
Oh, but it was still just like, oh really? God. Are we doing the cheesy fucking name drop? Like, are we doing that?
No, they just up and like told us what they were doing, like in just the most trolling way. Those assholes.
Yeah.
What a bunch of assholes. All right. I actually follow a couple of people on Twitter who work on that show. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was
wonderfully done.
It was great, and I just enjoyed. I mean, as always, I just enjoyed the show itself. It was just a pleasure to watch.
They hit the teen drama thing well. Mm-hmm. They hit the, you know, Superman-y bits well. It works really fantastically. I also did like that the just in case you thought maybe this isn't actually Bizarro.
Mm-hmm.
When they go to the final title card of the episode, it's reversed?
Yes. Yes. That was, yeah, that was like, yeah, we know what we're doing, assholes.
Also, when I saw that he had something around his neck, I was like, please let it say number one, please. But they very obviously had that thing around his neck to kind of echo that.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I don't think we're going to get lucky enough to have him do Bizarro speech. I just don't.
I know. I mean, that would be...
But I'm a hope.
I mean, I'd be so pleased if, if Superman punched him and he was like, me so happy, or whatever.
Right. Like, oh, that tickle, you know.
Exactly.
Me love Superman.
You love me? Yes. Then why are you fighting with me? Oh, goddamn. To explain it to him. It was great. I honestly don't know what more to say about the episode other than just the balls on those people just pulling this off.
Right, and it's like, I do love they have now built it to where none of us can ever trust anything. Yeah,
precisely.
Which is what you want, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because Superman is such a well-known character. Like, if they were doing this with, like, obscure... I don't know, 1980s Captain Atom comics.
For example.
You know, there'd be a few people, maybe me included, maybe not, depending, to be like, oh, well, yeah, I mean, obviously they're doing this. But, like, with Superman, it's everyone knows this shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so being able to fool people and to just know that you need to keep it fresh is a good look on them.
Yeah. I can't remember... as you know, almost every episode of Peacemaker, they do another sort of like casual reference to some relatively deep cut from the DC universe, and they did it again this week. But I don't remember.
Don't even think he counts as a deep cut anymore because you see a newspaper go by with like Peacemaker's first like villain he takes down, it's Kite Man.
That was it. Yeah, now that he's...
And I'm like, you know what? Yeah. Like, I'm sorry, but, like, Tom King worked so hard to be like, look, Kite Man! And made Kite Man, like, a big deal in the comics for years.
That's true.
And then with the Harley show doing Kite Man, I'm like, just it's not a fun pull anymore for me.
Yep, yeah, fair enough. Yeah, no, that's true.
It's the expected pull. I'm like, yeah. Give me Condiment King.
Yes.
You know, give me Polka Dot Man. Huh.
Sure.
You want to be weird? I mean, well, I guess Polka Dot Man was in Suicide Squad, so maybe not that. But yeah, it's like there are other things to do besides Kite Man. Like, Kite Man's not that funny anymore because of this.
No, you know, you're right. No, it's quite true. I mean, it was...
And it's a petty grievance.
Yeah,
but
I got a chuckle out of it, but I didn't say, oh, you know your stuff, James Gunn. So.
Right.
But anyway.
But yeah, no, the show, like, again, the first three episodes, I was like, eh, the show's fine. And the last two episodes really have turned me around on it, that they feel more grounded.
Yes, I agree.
They feel less like Gunn is leaning into being James Gunn, and more like he's has something to do, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No, I know what you mean. Although one thing they did that I'd found a little tiresome with this episode is the scene in which somebody, one of the characters, says, you know, you're a good guy, but you're always pushing people away. And I'm like, wait, isn't that like the exact thing that Quill says to Rocket Raccoon in Guardians of the Galaxy 2? And when I say isn't it, I mean that is the exact thing he says.
Sure.
And I was like, it's to me, it's just like back to the same thing. Like James Gunn has like three or four different characters that he can write and he just can't stop. And sometimes maybe that's like in writer's area of fascination, but it doesn't feel like that. It just feels like Gunn has only so many registers and he's just not going to get out of them.
And maybe. And like I said, but it works way better for me than it did just because it does feel like he's also doing other stuff.
Yeah, well, that's true. No, I agree with you on that. There are much. I was trying to remember which... I think it's Adebayo who says that to him when they're when they're having drinks. And she's planting the diary. Ridiculous looking Peacemaker's diary, which says Peacemaker's Diary on it. And I have no idea what that's supposed to be, but there you go.
Yeah, that's part of the quote-unquote fun.
Mm-hmm.
I did like that the minute he grabbed the helmet and he did the X-ray mode thing, I was just like, okay, so this is how we reveal.
Right.
And I was actually curious how they're going to do it because I was like, if Peacemaker sees him, no one's going to believe him.
Yeah, or Peacemaker will just want to shoot, kill him immediately.
We'll just shoot him, and then this all falls to hell.
Yeah.
And I was like, how are you going to pull this off? Oh, okay.
Although I wonder, to me, I remember the judo master in the previous episode before he gets shot again. Just sort of says, you know, you don't understand what's going on with the butterfly thing, and now we have. Iwuji with the Iwuji's the actor. Mern is, you know, is a butterfly, but it seems to me that there's something else happening here, and that next scene is not going to go the way it's sort of set up to go.
Exactly.
He's going to say,
I would be surprised if it did.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. It would be more like, okay, you have to stop. You have to listen to me. You know.
Yeah.
Because you know, we're not who you think we are, etc., etc.
Exactly.
And. And I also have to say the idea of like the Peacemaker and the gang fighting a giant angry gorilla just really does feel like something that Gunn just had like on a like in a list somewhere of like bullshit I've always wanted to do and just you know, check that off. I mean that's fine. It's like
right.
No other reason. Just there's a gorilla in the back of the factory. Sure. And the chainsaw, like, one thing I do like about Peacemaker, in some shows this is a bit, I don't enjoy it, but I like the way things are just telegraphed so delightfully, and, like, it's so over the top. Like, you know, Vigilante gets out the chainsaw, and then you see the gorilla, and it's like, oh, okay, oh, Economus is gonna, like, come in with a chainsaw.
Uh-huh.
And he does! And you're not disappointed, because, damn it, that's what you bought the ticket for.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, it's It's been an interesting ride so far.
Yeah. No, I agree. Still, I only think there's 8 episodes or so.
Yes. So there are only 3 left.
Yeah. Okay. Sweet. I think, you know, I think the pacing has been good too. Like, I never feel like they're spinning their wheels at all, you know.
Right.
So, and I think, yeah, I think it might be one of those rare shows that I can just, that, you know, where there's nothing particularly wasted. Although I remember episode 2 seemed to spend a lot of time with Peacemaker trying to get out of that building.
Yeah, and that's it. It's like, right, like the first 3 episodes, I think I see why they were like, here, just have them all at once.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise it really would have pushed the show down some.
I think so too, yeah. Oh, hey, speaking of things that are dragging, I watched the pilot episode, or the first episode, I should say, of a Korean high school zombie show called All of Us Are Dead.
Okay.
Which, I can't remember the director, the showrunner, has done other things before that have been good. And I watched it. It was about an hour long. And I was like, oh, man. Like, I was like, okay, some of this is good, but it's dragging a bit. But there can only be, like, I don't know, 5 episodes. There's like 11 or 12 episodes. I'm not going to watch any more of this because, holy moly, all that can happen is they can just sort of, like, go from one room in the school to the next. And I do not want to see that.
Yeah, that doesn't sound great.
Yeah, I just can't, like, it's just, like, a zombie movie should be, like, a zombie movie length, not prestige limited series length. It's just bizarre.
Walking Dead.
Yeah. Yes, only these dead are the running, snarling, screaming dead, you know.
Right.
But yeah. Anyway, that's so we're talking, I think we covered some of the things we were wanting to just initially cover with Peacemaker, Legends, and Superman.
Yeah, no, so I also started rewatching Parks and Rec.
Yeah, yeah.
For not the first time, but and it was kind of interesting to me that, like, because, you know, it's one of those shows that chains very quickly, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're like, I'm going to rewatch the Parks and Rec, and suddenly you're, I don't know, 7 or 8 episodes in. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Did you start at the start?
I never start with season 1.
Okay, that was my first question.
I think I've watched season 1 once just to do it.
Uh-huh.
And past that, I've never even bothered again. I don't care.
Well, it just doesn't make... It just is so different than, you know, in so many ways than the subsequent ones.
But I noticed something interesting about the show this time.
Mm-hmm. Tell me.
So, first of all, seasons 2 and 3, which I do think of as 1 and 2, of course.
Right.
Sorry. Are just fucking all-timer after all-timer.
Oh, yeah.
Like, but like to a weird degree, almost, right? Because you'll see a show and you'll be like, oh, like this is a good episode. But you know how like you watch a show and you'll rewatch a show a number of times. There's like, oh, well, maybe I want to skip this episode because this isn't my favorite episode. And I'll just, you know. I've seen it like 20 times and I don't need to see it again.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing in those, you know, in season 2 or 3 that is like that. Like every episode. Basically, in those 2 seasons, they set up the entire rest of the show.
Oh, okay.
Like every major thing, everything is set up.
Hmm.
Like in there. Every concept that is pulled forward and referenced, you know what I mean?
Just, yeah.
It is a stunning bit of work. But also, when you get to season 4, once Leslie starts running for office, I realize this is the point where there start being episodes that get a little weaker.
Mm-hmm.
And it's partially because the show starts turning more and more into a cartoon.
Okay. That makes sense.
And it's not in a bad way, right? Like, there's a lot of great stuff in the last, you know, majority of the show. But it is one of those things of like they start heightening stuff because they kind of did the entire show in those first seasons 2 and 3. And so now it's like, well, we have to push the entire cast because they were dedicated to evolving the characters. But that often meant that they were no longer just in the parks department.
Hmm.
So now you need reasons for them to keep circling each other and keep showing up every episode?
Yeah, I remember I noticed that as the seasons went on as well. I think that's the problem that a lot of modern sitcom shows have, as the characters evolve. You have to keep them together somehow. Yeah, and sometimes right. The reasons get a little strained.
Yeah. And again, it's still like a good show, but it's just they start getting mired in, well, what do we do next? Mm-hmm. How do we push this forward? You know, unless he's going to run for Congress, and then, you know, obviously, like, just from memory. But, like, then she's going to get, you know, tossed out of that, and then it's going to be this, and then it's going to be that. It's just like, okay. And it's not that they're bad episodes, because they're not.
Mm-hmm.
But they lack a little something.
Yeah.
And also, like, despite that, let's be clear, you know, some of the campaigning episodes, has there been a moment in sitcom history in the last, like, I don't know, I'm going to call it 20 years, that is honestly as repeatably funny as all of them in that ice rink trying to get to that stage while, like, every 30 seconds, get on your feet, just starts blasting?
Oh my God, I love that. I just...
Right, like, that one scene is just, like, one of the single-handed, just funniest goddamn things ever to fucking come across anywhere.
And actually, the funniest thing about that, like, the funniest thing for me about that scene is Amy Poehler's face and how she refuses to break that sort of, that, like, triumphant smile that politicians get when they first, like, show up. Like this, hello everybody, but the mask just keeps staying on even as her legs are just like skidding out from under her, and everybody is just, oh my God, so good. Just, yeah, that's kind of, I mean, just basically like one of those like classic comedy scenes.
Yeah, but I mean, just so fucking well done. Just stunning. And again, there's still a lot of really good stuff later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that thing. It's like, don't get me wrong. Like, the show has endless good stuff in it.
Right.
But there is that kind of small weakening.
Yeah.
Also, God, I was watching... and again, because, you know, you power through these, right?
Yeah.
And there's the... I guess it's in season 4? Because, yeah, she ran for office, or maybe it's even season 5 now, I forget. But there's the, like, the Halloween thing where, like, Jerry has a heart attack, and then they're like, oh, we're going to do this garage sale to raise money for him. And everyone's like, oh, Ron, what are you selling? He's like, this table, I made it. And he's just sitting behind this table, and has a piece of paper on it. Here's the thing. You've seen this table before. You saw how big that table was, right? Like, that table easily seats, like... 8 solid wooden handmade table, and he has a sheet of paper on it that just says, you know, good table, $500, and it doesn't sell. I'm like, what the fuck? That is bullshit. Like, I'm driving out to Indiana and buying that table, $500. It was just such a weird moment for me.
That's great.
Like, have these people never actually priced out a piece of wood? I know it's meaningless. I don't know why it bugged me, but it did.
I get it. You know, that, but and it works that, you know, that he would have this, like, you know, like, solid, like, handsome table that, yeah, you know, that clearly of good quality.
And he doesn't care, right? Because, yeah, he'll just make other ones, yeah.
Exactly. But he's also like, I will give it to you for a fair price. But still, yeah. And still, nobody in Pawnee wants it because, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, stunning. Stunning.
Good table. Oh, that's great! I love the way they actually updated his character, because I remember the first season, he was just sort of this kind of like right wing sort of kind of jerk who hated government but was in government, right, to destroy it from within. And I thought, well, that's like an, I've met people like that, and I get it, but at the same time, that's not really, that's not much to go on for a character beyond like a few episodes. But I think that's one of the things that made season one so, so like uninvolving. They just never, like everybody was just like a broad sort right. of idea rather than like a character, a thought out character.
Yeah, they tried some stuff, you know, and it didn't really land.
Mm-hmm.
But no, season, like I said, like as of season two, it just, the show, I mean, even with that first bit, where it's just Ron just comes in and it's like, you know, so here's the thing, and Leslie just goes off and the parents just don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like, you know, it's like, so what can I do? He's like, there's someone on fire at the park. And you're off. You're just like, okay, this is a fucking sitcom. Like, here we go.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, it's still such a great show. But, again, like, once you hit that point where they start turning them into cartoons more and more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, like, in the first, and I say first two seasons, and again, we all know what I mean.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
Andy is, and ignoring the actual Chris Pratt being an asshole part of this, but, you know, Andy is this child in a man's body, right?
Right.
But by season four, it's Andy says ridiculous things and is basically a child, but everyone just goes along with it and no one thinks it's weird.
Yeah. Pretty much.
And it's just, again, it's that cartoonification of the show. Like, Jam. Like, even in this town, the idea of Jam is just a little bit too far. And they still have fun with it, and it's still fun, but it's just that little bit too far.
Yeah. I'll go with you on that one, yeah.
That's the thing. It's like bringing the other Sapersteins. Like, it's that thing of, like, they just cranked it just a little bit further because I think they didn't know what else to do.
I think you're right about that. I mean, there is a point in which, you know, it stopped really being about, because one thing is, I mean, Pawnee in the beginning was sort of a recognizable sort of like small, you know, Midwestern American city. But after a while, right. I mean, just it began to be populated by these outlandish characters. I mean, they were all really funny, outlandish characters. But it gradually, for me, less and less resembled a place and just became sort of like an opportunity to flex their respective comedic chops.
Right. That's the thing, right? Like, when you use Dennis Feinstein once,
mm-hmm.
he's funny.
Yes.
You know, when you use it like the sixth time, he's not funny anymore.
That's true.
And I think that's kind of what, again, like, it's not like the show was ever bad. It's just, like, that's what weakened it.
Yeah.
The same thing happened to 30 Rock.
Yeah.
You know, it happens to, again, a lot of shows, right? Like, especially with comedies where they just have to keep, they just have to keep upping it.
Yeah, or it's like, there's a lot of, say, sort of supernatural dramas where they have what I always call just powers creep, where eventually everybody seems to right. be superpowered.
Right.
Yeah.
It's interesting that there are certain shows that are, you know, lost to time now, I guess. But, like, you know, Eureka managed to never really do that.
Oh, man, Eureka.
Warehouse 13. Like, weirdly enough, they managed in, like, 5 years not do it.
Yeah.
You know, like, something like Killjoys didn't really do it much.
No, they upped the stakes with each season, but...
Right.
But the core dynamic was always unchanged. And I think that's why it works so well, because it was always...
And again, not that these are sitcoms, but...
Right.
But, like, even, like, you know, like, Scrubs, again, like, well, I think it's funny that, like, Scrubs kind of went a little bit more cartoonish, then realized and pulled back.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like Parks and Rec's attempt to pull back was an interesting move, because their attempt, of course, at the end, was to pull back by moving everything forward into the future.
Hmm.
So that they could have the cartoon, but it could feel more grounded. Because, well, it's all wacky future.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm like, that's an interesting way to try to pull that off. I don't know if I, like, agree. But it at least made stuff feel less cartoony.
Mm-hmm.
Because it made it more acceptable. Because it was just, well, it's the future. It's all wacky.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I overall, I liked that last season. I like what they did.
Yeah, no, me too. So, yeah, no, again, like, I still love the show dearly. It's just, it was like when I rewatched Supernatural, right? Like, I hadn't realized, like, oh my god, like, every episode in season 5 really is that good.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and it was somehow just watching Parks and Rec this time. It was just, oh my god, I did not realize that every episode of those two seasons is that fucking strong.
Yeah. And other times, it's like watching Supernatural season 8, when you're like, oh god.
Oh, right, that happened, yeah.
These episodes are not so good. But, you know, you get the idea. What was I going to say?
Anyway, I also heard tell that there's a show that I've never heard of, but there's lots of shows I've never heard of, but specifically this one is just weird to me, and I think we need to discuss it.
Yeah, this is the reboot or remake of the 4400. This is this CW show. It's still in its first season. They've shortened it to 4400, I guess.
And I think that's why I didn't realize that it had happened.
Uh-huh.
Because just going, we're going to remake our show by dropping the article off the name?
Yeah.
When most of the fandom doesn't even refer to it with the article?
Yeah.
Not that I ever really watched the show myself anyway, but still, like, you'd see references to it and be like, oh yeah, I'm watching 4400. And so they're still just saying that, I guess.
Now they've just made it official? I don't know.
Right, it's like we're going to reboot Parks and Rec, but this time it's going to be called Parks and Rec, but it'll have an ampersand.
Right.
Like, why would you do this?
Or I'll just be like, Rec. Oh, no, I kind of want to do this. I want like a gritty reboot of Parks and Rec with one of the characters. Nice. Call it Rec. Just one of the side characters is now like a hard drinking sort of middle-aged disaster. Kind of like they're doing like a reboot of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Fresh Prince, yes.
Serious one. I'm actually kind of curious just to see.
Will Smith is involved in it. I'm like, I want to see it. Yeah. Like, it sounds like it is a concept that lends itself to serious as well as funny.
But exactly. That's partly what made the comedy work was that it was like a comedic take on things that were actual serious issues.
Right.
Or, you know, that lent themselves. Yeah. This is essentially what you're saying. I'm just rephrasing you. But yeah, 4400. The 4400. I looked up the original air date, and it was actually a lot longer ago than I remember. It was
really
2004.
Huh? Yeah, that is longer ago than I would think.
And when I think about it, I'm like, well, of course it didn't happen in the last 10 years. But at the same time, I'm like, oh yeah. The only really notable thing I remember about the 4400, I watched some episodes, was that it's Mahershala Ali was in it long before he became...
Right.
And before he was named Mahershala Ali, I think it was Mahershala Hashbaz still at that point. And some point just snipped off part of his name. What it was hopefully a painless outpatient procedure. Anyway. Yeah, I enjoyed, I remember watching it, and I always enjoyed the premise, and I always thought it was odd because it was one of those sort of science fiction event shows that we think only came out in the wake of Lost, but I believe this actually debuted contemporaneous, or maybe a little even bit before Lost. I can't remember the exact, thought Lost was 2006.
But yeah, no, that is weird, isn't it?
And the premise, which the reboot shares, is 4,400 people from different time periods, but I think probably all 20th century or 21st, 20th century, sort of just drop out of the sky and ever...
Lost was 2004, too.
Oh, okay, so right at the same time. So that must have been something in the air. I remember watching the 4,400. It was never great, and it was... I think it suffered a bit from coming out right around the same time as Lost, because Lost had some similar preoccupations, but was like just like a prestige version of these kinds of sci-fi shows, whereas 4400 was not too prestige. I'll put it that way.
Right.
But still enjoyable. Also, Peter Coyote was sort of always a comforting presence on our screens. So when the reboot started up, I was kind of curious about it because I'd heard they had sort of done it to sort of reflect the social situation of this day and age. But what I didn't realize, what that means is that pretty much every single character in the show is black. Like, there's almost no white people in the entire show. They're either black or brown or, you know, of color. And the few white people there are clearly villains. they're not mustache-wagging villains or mustache-twirling villains, but they are sort of on the side of the establishment. And it does a fair amount of work to make parallels between the sort of displaced, you know, refugees out of time and the plight of you know, of minorities in America. And actually even says, you know, somebody, one of the characters has only come from like 2015 or 14, and people are, and she's like, why is the government holding us? What threat do we, pose? And somebody says, yeah, that you come from 2014. 2021 is a very different America. So these things are acknowledged. Even it's nice. And it's one of the few shows that actually deals in any way with the pandemic. Like, one of the characters is dealing with COVID at one point during a flashback. You know, just things that that make it feel a little more contemporary than anything else. And like, one of the main character is a woman from like 16 years ago. She's a lawyer from Detroit who ends up dropping through a hole into modern day Detroit. That's where it's set. And she ends up falling in love with a black trans woman from the 1920s.
Okay.
While at the same time trying to deal with the fact that her family, whom she had seen like yesterday, but for them it's like 16 years. So there's lots of things that I really quite like about it. Like on these levels, dealing with things in ways that most contemporary shows just still won't really touch. There are some issues. The pacing is kind of slow. It sometimes feels like they're just trying to, like
it's 4,400 minutes long. No,
that's right. Yeah,
too obvious, too easy. I'm sorry.
Pretty good. And also, of course, because they're filming this during the pandemic, right, there are maybe like a dozen main characters, but they have to actually keep on referring to these 4,400 people.
I was going
to
say, like, but secretly it's the four.
it's closer to the 44. But they keep on saying, oh, they're being held in other facilities. That's the excuse. But you never, ever see them. And I, with the exception of people falling out of the sky in like a park in Detroit.
Sure.
So
the way you do.
The way you do, yes. So that sometimes feels a little odd. It makes things feel a little more sort of bare than they need to be. And they have to come up with a lot of reasons to keep people in this hotel, because they're limited in what they can film.
Sure.
So sometimes it feels like they're just trying to like stretch out their sets and their like locations and like the amount of characters they can handle, in ways that's, you can sort of see the seams at points. But by and large, I just think they're doing interesting things with it, especially with these like characters are from different times dealing with the actual politics of the past and the present. That is fascinating to me. And sometimes it's a little clunky. I mean, whatever. But I it's more interesting that they're actually doing it. And often it feels kind of like they're redoing like The Gifted, because you've got all these people who turn out, some of them have like specific powers. Some of them seem to work in tandem with each other.
Nice.
Like one person can heal. It turns out another can heal themselves from any wound. Another person can heal other people from their wounds, but takes their sickness, like that illness, into themselves. So they have to like give it to somebody else, but they can give it to this person,
right?
And so on and so forth. Nice. So that's kind of cool. So it feels a little bit like watching The Gifted again at moments, and I'm not complaining about that. That's
right.
Yeah. So yeah, it's my pick of the week. But I'm sort of, I find it's uneven, but I'm still watching it. So
that's fair. I mean, like, part of my heart, of course, wants to be like, well, yeah, Parks and Rec is my pick of the week, because I watch it. But honestly, I think my pick of the week is going to be Superman and Lois, because it has so far, you know, three, I guess, episodes in, completely avoided the DCCW sophomore slump.
That's true. No, it's come out really strong, and it's just like done at least one major fake out, and just
like, I never liked Smallville and the Adventures of Superboy show, like Superman and the Lois and Clark was never quite my jam either, honestly. Yeah. This feels like the Superman show I always wanted.
Yeah. I completely agree.
So,
oh,
it just makes me happy.
Jeez. Oh, hey, we are coming close to the end of the hour.
We are.
But I realize there's something we haven't mentioned at all that I've seen that you haven't.
Okay.
The Book of Boba Fett, Chapter 5.
Okay, we're going to mostly ignore it because it's fucking Boba Fett, but I have to tell you the best comment I saw on this on Twitter.
Okay.
That I mentioned to somebody else who, like, works in, like, pop culture type things, and they had seen it too. We were both like, we need to shut the internet down. We're done here. someone actually said that, like, you know, oh, this was a good episode, but that makes sense because they saw how bad episode 4 was received, so they did this.
Wow.
Because apparently you could write, shoot, edit, and put in special effects an episode of Boba Fett in, I would guess, if you have to wait for how people receive episode 4, 5 days?
Five, maybe four, who knows? I mean, they can turn this shit out in like 24 hours, 48 tops.
I was just like, holy shit! I have seen people misunderstand how this shit is made before, but that is impressively dumb.
Yeah. But, you know, it's funny because somebody on Twitter today had posted actually the fight scene, sort of the destroyer battle on from The Last Jedi, and said, I remember watching this with like in the theater, and everybody was cheering, and I thought, finally, a Star Wars movie so good nobody can hate it, right? And then on cue.
Yeah, I saw that.
Just people going, they had to CGI out a knife to, like, explain why Ray didn't get... I'm like, holy shit, these YouTube assholes are still out there. It's like they go dormant for a while.
What I love is that, like, it trended on Twitter, and someone's like, you know, and, like, the Twitter trend thing was like, people discuss whether it was the best or the worst, and someone else in my feed was just like, don't we do this every day? Like, isn't this still just... We can't stop this.
I know.
It needs to fucking stop. But again, like, what I like is it just reminds me of how good that movie is every time.
I know. That's the thing. I'm like, ooh, yeah. I was thinking, oh, man, gotta watch The Last Jedi again. That movie kicked ass. What?
I have a caveat.
What?
I love the movie, and I also, like, and I don't like Rise of Skywalker.
Mm-hmm.
But I also admit that for what Star Wars is supposed to be for the movie specifically, Rise of Skywalker is good Star Wars. Last Jedi is bad Star Wars.
Yeah, from a strict, what do you want out of Star Wars? Rise of Skywalker.
From a, like, this is meant for 12-year-olds. This is meant to just be like cool, fun space shit for 12-year-olds. It doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean that is part of why a segment of the fandom did not go for The Last Jedi.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, I can admit that. Like, that's the issue. It's like, and again, it's like, I don't like Rise, but I understand why 12-year-olds would love it.
Oh, yeah. No, I've and I know people whom I know, love, and respect who enjoyed Rise of Skywalker. Sure. And I just, I don't agree.
Yeah, me either.
Because it was like, well, you know what it was like anyway.
Right. But again, like, just taking it by the, you know, let's actually be fair enough to judge a thing by what it wants to be judged by what it's trying to do. In a large sense, like, you know, Return of the Jedi. The Last Jedi is kind of a failure in that Star Wars movies aren't meant to be for people who've been watching Star Wars all this time. They are meant to be for 12-year-olds who are watching Star Wars for the first time.
Yeah, and in that case, you know, Rise of Skywalker certainly qualifies.
Right, and Jedi fails.
But honestly, there's something actually much more worrisome to me in Star Wars canon than Rise of Skywalker. It's the and you've probably even
is
seen
it mopeds.
No, it's not mopeds or Vespas. It's the articles are beginning to spin up based on the most recent Boba Fett, the reappraisal of Phantom Menace. Because it features a ship from the Phantom Menace, and people who have nothing better to do than write about Star Wars on the internet are saying, oh, this is part of how there's been just a general reappraisal of the Phantom Menace. And I'm like, guys, that movie was garbage. I don't care about like the reappraisal. It doesn't count. Stop it. Just
right.
Stop it. And I think it's maybe a better movie than the sort of the horrified sort of like recoil from it. But it's still not good though.
No.
That's all I can say. But yeah, the funny thing about the book of the Boba Fett. This episode was titled Return of the Mandalorian, and that's all it was. It was just a vastly superior piece of like television in the middle of what has clearly turned out to be just a, I don't know if it's a misfire or just a really unfortunate set of choices. Or just an idea that they wanted to make something about Boba Fett, but never got around when they couldn't come up with a good story. They're like, ah, fuck it, let's make it anyway. And episode 5 just showed how dull the Book of Boba Fett was. And I think even Temuera Morrison kind of acknowledged this when he actually said in an interview that he says like, yeah, Boba Fett should not have this many lines. Like, he says it because the more Boba Fett talks, the less mysterious and the less interesting he becomes. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly it.
I hope the people who are in it for whatever nostalgia hit that they are in it for enjoy their shit. Mm-hmm. I, not being a Star Wars person, that's the thing, right? Like, if they did, I don't even know what they could do because there's not a nostalgia type thing that would do this to me, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, again, like, the stuff that I would be nostalgic for in that sense wasn't in that medium. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I get you.
But, like, yeah, I get it, and I hope that they get what they want out of it, and I just have no interest in ever watching it.
Nope, fair enough.
But I am now fascinated by it, since it only takes 4 days to make an episode.
Yeah, it's amazing. They just, like, they call up Bryce Dallas Howard, and like, hey, can you direct an entire episode with a massive budget in, like, just a few days? Yeah. What do you want to be about? We'll figure it out when you get on set. Come down.
Oh, real quick before we go,
because
I do have to go. But can we just go all the way back to Legends for a minute and just make fun of them for finding a terrible chant? Having everyone in the bar, because they're supposed to be like betting on stuff, start chanting, take a chance on Sarah Lance. Like, it makes no sense. Like, it, you know, she's got a chance, Sarah, something. You know, Sarah Lance has got a chance. There are ways to make that work, but take a chance on Sarah Lance. Like, it just sounds like a bad 50s advertising slogan for, like, a decaf coffee.
Yeah, I know. Or like a local election or something. Yeah.
It was so bad. And they committed so hard.
Oh, they really did. They really, really did. Oh, yeah. It's funny, because when they started doing, like, when she started, like, attempting, I had forgotten that she was essentially indestructible. So I was kind of horrified. I'm like, gee, everybody's really blasé about the fact she's probably going to her death. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, wait, she can't. Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, geez, that episode was good. Like, I mean, that show still manages to, like, just completely surprise me on an almost weekly basis.
Yep. I just, and I'm curious to how they're going to go forward with their plan, if only because they can't at this point lose physical Gideon for good.
Right. I was thinking about that too. I'm thinking that if they'll get, they have to get the Wave Rider back eventually.
Right.
But they're not going to they're not going to lose physical Gideon. So either.
But they also have to.
Right. Well, I was wondering if maybe they could keep evil Gideon, but sort of reprogram to be like a.
Yeah. Good... Then we have two Gideons. I'm thinking we're gonna have good Gideon be like, I'll just give up this body and I'll take over the ship. Takes over the ship, but then can still incorporate when she wants to go off on missions.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
Yeah. Like, they're going to try the best of both worlds, and they'll succeed, because it's a legend.
Exactly.
I refuse to ever doubt this show at this point.
No.
Maybe we'll be lucky enough to actually, maybe we can get the Leonard Snart AI ship in.
Oh, nice. Please, yes, please. Oh, also.
Anyway.
Also, just before we go, one more thing that I loved from that episode.
Right.
It was a brief throwaway moment. When the bar owner shows the time bar owner, he's like a, I can't remember the name of that actor, just veteran character actor.
Right.
Shows up and he's like, "You're time travelers," and they're like, and they try to like weasel out of it, and they do the classic sort of like. Giving different
responses.
No,
we're not. Don't be silly.
and then Nate just like, you know, we've been doing this for so long. You think we'd be better at it by now? I'm like,
right.
Yeah. Just perfect Legends moment.
Yeah. But they would not.
They would not. Exactly. Anyway, yes, I also have another podcast to get to because I'm a busy man.
All right.
So we'll, I guess, get that music on.
All right. We'll play some music. Woo!
Woo-hoo.